This Week Today, Fridays, 6 to 7 p.m.
Who's this from? I don't know. Oh, wait, it's from Caroline, sends a WhatsApp. She says, slightly strange question from John. People who bull checks have no money and no alternatives. And this is the important bit, Caroline. This is what I'm talking about. And we're going to talk about it with our second guest. No one is building anything for them made from better materials. And that's the question, Caroline. Why not? Why are better houses not being built? Isn't it... We'll find out. That's our guest coming up in about 15 minutes or so. Now, though, the big story of the week, the IEC, Independent Election Commission of South Africa, has gone to the Constitutional Court on an urgent basis to appeal against the order of the Electoral Court that paved the way for former President Jacob Zuma to run for election. The MK party submitted its list of candidates in March for the upcoming election and included Zuma on its list for the National Assembly. Well, the IEC received 22 objections to the eligibility of Zuma to stand for the election based on the fact that he'd been sentenced to a 12-month prison term without the option of a fine. Zuma and the MK party appealed against the decision and the Electoral Court has ruled in favour of the MK party and Zuma on Tuesday. Nkululeko Tselane is a legal director at IEMSA, the Institute of Election Management Services in Africa. Nkululeko, good evening to you. Thank you very much. Remind us why originally this 12-month prison term, why does that matter? Why couldn't, according to the original decision, why couldn't former President Zuma stand?
Good evening, John, and good evening to your listeners. So Section 47(1)(e) of the Constitution states that the certain group or category of people that are disqualified from being members of the National Assembly, and those are people that have been convicted and sentenced to a prison term of longer than 12 months without the option for a fine. And now we know that President Zuma was convicted of contempt of court and sentenced to a period of 15 months without the option of a fine, of course. So in the ordinary reading of the words and of the Constitution, many people were of the view that he would then be disqualified from being a member of the National Assembly.
Okay, and that was the original decision. He was no longer allowed to stand because of this punishment.
Well, so he was placed on the candidate list for the MK party. Mm-hmm. And then there were objections lodged in terms of Section 30 of the Electoral Act. The IEC then had to rule on the objections, and it ruled that because of Section 47(1)(e), the former president could not contest. Now that's where things started to get a little bit more controversial and complicated, because even at the time I did state that the IEC was actually incorrect in a reading of the law to rule that the former president did not qualify, and then of course the Electoral Court agreed with me and ruled in President Zuma's favor.
Okay, tell us why were you right?
So in 2004 Winnie Mandela was sentenced, was convicted for theft and fraud. So then in 2009, I believe the period was for 4 years. However, it was a suspended sentence, so she didn't actually have to go to prison. So then in 2009, she was placed on the ANC's candidate list as a candidate for the National Assembly, and the Freedom Front Plus then raised an objection. In that matter, then what happened is that the Electoral Court ruled that because she did not actually spend time in prison, her conviction of over 4 years did not disqualify her. Now, I'm simplifying it, but that is essentially what happened. So off of the case law and the way that the court has stated that the interpretation of Section 47(1)(e), that's why I believe. I mean, there's a few reasons President Zuma and the MK party put up in their defense. And unfortunately, since we don't have the judgment yet from the Electoral Court, we can only really speculate on what basis the Electoral Court agreed. with the President Zuma and the MK party.
Okay, the bottom line is that he was reinstated, he was allowed to run, and now this is the big news this week, is the IEC has now gone to the Constitutional Court. The way you look at it, when based on the arguments as well that we heard Darlene Porfa say in court, why would the Constitutional Court look at it differently?
So... We've got a slight problem, actually, with this matter. So, as I mentioned, the Winnie Mandela case, I do believe that the Electoral Court got it wrong in terms of its interpretation. I think she was supposed to have been disqualified. However, the court is bound by its previous decisions. So now we're in a situation where it's kind of the law is kind of wrong, in my opinion. So now the only one that can fix it is the Constitutional Court.
Right.
So now that's what's happening, and the IEC has decided to take it there, which I have my own issues on. But we do need the law to be clarified, because on an ordinary reading of Section 47(1)(e), I think we would all probably agree that the former president should be disqualified. But unfortunately, that's not the law.
Okay, because of the precedent that has been sent. What, just in a nutshell, to explain it to me who doesn't understand law in Nkululeko, if you have gone to, and let's see if I understand it, correct me if I'm wrong. If you have gone to jail, or you've been sentenced to jail within a certain period of time from today, I can't stand for election.
If you've been sentenced to jail and you've spent more than 12 months in jail.
Okay.
Yes, then after you're out, you're going to have to wait for 5 years before you can hold public office.
Because that was a question that came up yesterday, is that we have political leaders who have been in jail, the PA leader, for example, a famous one, but yes. That was more than 5 years ago, so it's okay.
Correct.
Is that something that will come up here as well? That grace period, in other words, you know, if you, I guess that the argument there is that you have been rehabilitated and you are now a member of society.
Yes, so this is really it's really an interpretation issue, but just perhaps to raise an issue that as to why I'm not happy that the IEC is raising it. So mm-hmm. What happens is that the objection. So in terms of Section 31, any member of the public, including the chief electoral officer, may raise an objection to the candidacy of a person on based off all of these reasons we've discussed. However, in this case, it wasn't the chief electoral officer. It was the general public that raised the objections. So then the IEC ruled on it, and then the IEC was correct in defending the matter in the electoral court, because mm-hmm. it must explain why it came to that decision. But now, by appealing the matter to the Constitutional Court, the IEC is now positioning itself as an adversary to a candidate, which is bad for the perception of the elections and the credibility of the IEC.
I want to disagree with you there. It's what you said earlier. They're seeking clarification more than
yes.
they are against the decision.
Yes. So there's two ways that they could have gone about this. So we all agree there's no disagreement that we do need clarity on the interpretation of Section 47(1)(e), and perhaps we also need the precedent to be fixed. So there's two ways that can happen. The first way is an appeal. Now, the problem with the appeal is that our court system is adversarial. So it's party A versus party B. Now the IEC is an independent body. They're a referee in the election games. They're not a participant. So what they could have done, and this is what I suggested they should have done, is that they can bring what's called an ex parte application. So an ex parte application is when you bring an application to the court where there's no opponent. So it's just the IEC saying, look, here's this section that is causing confusion. We don't really know what's going on. And we need clarification on it. And then the court can do that. And by doing that, it doesn't place itself as an adversary to a candidate, and it still gets that clarity that we all desperately need.
And I almost feel like they could also have just quietly whispered to one of the political parties to do the same thing.
One would hope they wouldn't.
Yeah, you know, like there could be a deep mole that could have said, "Listen, we can't do anything, but you know, just go."
And also, what you must also remember is that if you look at the court papers, it's the IEC and two other respondents,
right?
And they are the ones who actually made the objection.
Who are those two? Do we know?
To be quite honest, I'm not sure who they are in particular, but they are members of the public. I know one of them distanced themselves from it, but the other one proceeded with it. So it should have been in order to protect the credibility of the IEC. So nothing precludes IEC from appealing. There's nothing legally wrong with it. But what would have been better for their credibility is the people that actually lodged the objection to then prosecute it to finality. It's not the duty of the IEC to prosecute this matter to finality. And it's one candidate. One candidate is not going to affect the IEC's processes. And also, it's not going to affect the freeness and the fairness, because even though we've got all of this confusion, the nomination period is closed. The objection period is closed. So it actually doesn't matter. It's not like IEC is going to be proliferated with nominations of candidates that conflict with Section 47(1)(e) or with objections to other people. So the IEC would have until the next elections to get all the clarity that they need. It's not, in my opinion, it's also not urgent, because President Zuma is also not running as an independent candidate. He's running he's on the list of a party. So the voters aren't voting for the former president. They're voting for the MK party. If they vote for them, of course.
Yeah, that was going to be my next question, is this timeline. We've heard stories the Constitutional Court backlog is huge. So being able to squeeze this in and get a decision all between now and the end of May.
So that's why they brought it on an urgent basis. So they had two options to appealing. They could have brought an appeal in the normal course. That would have given them 15 days to lodge the appeal, or they could bring it in the urgent course, which they've done to try to expedite the process. So yes,
we should
have an answer. We should have an answer before the 29th of May due to the urgency.
Okay, let's take a couple of scenarios, right? So let's say first of all, just before we do that, the sentence and the way Jacob Zuma's sentence was handed down directly from the Constitutional Court, and people will say it wasn't a real sentence because he didn't have an opportunity to defend himself, all that kind of stuff. Does that matter in this situation?
No, it doesn't. So he was convicted for contempt of court. So contempt of court is something is a hybrid process. So it's a mixture between both civil and criminal. So there's actually nothing wrong with his sentence, and it was argued they did try to appeal it, and even in the arguments in their initial matter about the nature of the proceedings. So that is not even worth exploring, in my opinion. We know it was a legitimate sentence. We know that it was properly followed, and we know that it followed the contempt of court proceedings correctly.
Okay. Now, let's take a couple of scenarios, right? And it's a lot of what-ifs, I guess, and legal people don't like that, but Nkululeko, help me out. The Constitutional Court says, and I think the important thing is, Constitutional Court decides actually it was erred with the Winnie Mandela case, therefore this case is following that erring, and Jacob Zuma can't stand. He can't go to Parliament. What can he still be the face of MK? Can he still run with MK? Can he still hold any position?
You're asking something that's very interesting. So yes, he can. So he can still be on the ballot. The IEC has the discretion as to how it structures the ballot. So currently, as it stands, the IEC's approach is that the party leader is placed on the ballot. Now we know that the former president is not officially a member of the MK party, but he is the party leader for all intents and purposes. So that would bring up a completely another interesting scenario. But I do think that even if the Concord ruled that he can't he can't stand as a candidate, his picture would still be allowed on the ballot. It's a technical issue.
Still the face of the party, but he might not necessarily go to parliament should they get enough votes to get a seat in parliament.
Correct.
Sure. Okay. So this is very legal. What does this mean? Let's talk about the IEC for a while. Do we worry that the IEC is playing referee and player in this situation, Nkululeko?
Look, we should worry for perception. I'm the first person who defends the IEC because I think it's important also for our democracy that we have free and fair elections and that us as the general public defend those free and fair elections. That's always been the culture of South Africa. That being said, the IEC is not making it very easy right now. Because it is the wrong decision in my opinion. We should hope that they don't err like this again. And we should still defend our democracy as much as we can as the general public. And that's why we have to hold the IEC to account and we have to call them out when we think that they're making mistakes.
TG via WhatsApp disagrees with you. He says, and I'm going to read this verbatim and help me out.
Okay.
People must remember the court action was between the IEC and the MK party and the legal representatives in the MK party never objected to the matter. So it's not true that the IEC is the wrong party that is taking the matter to the Concord for clarity, and it's false the IEC is entering a wrong terrain.
Well, I disagree with that. So remember, the IEC has to explain their decision and defend their decision. Yes, we agree. But the IEC is, like, legally they're entitled. So we have to look at this from two perspectives.
Yeah.
We have to look at it to the letter of the law. Is the IEC a party to the proceedings? Yes. Is the IEC legally entitled to appeal the matter? Yes, we agree. There's legally nothing wrong with that. But then we also have to look at it from a freeness and fairness and from an election credibility perspective. Now, if the IEC wants clarity, the best way is to do it in a way that does not make them an adversary to a particular candidate. Because now they're entering the adversarial nature, whereas there is another avenue for them, which is an ex parte application, which would get them the clarity they need.
Okay, so it's the way they've gone about it which just leaves a little sour taste in your mouth.
Yes, and we know how politically charged people can be around this point. And the IEC has to protect is its credibility and public perception. Now already, if you can go on social media, it's divided on this topic. And a lot of the criticism of the IEC will be disingenuous. It will be for the purposes of whatever reasons that they have. But what the IEC is supposed to do is avoid putting itself in that position in the first place.
It is their job, however, to make sure that legitimate candidates are standing. That's why you give those lists in so early.
Now, that's another issue we need clarity on. So the MK party, which I disagree with, the MK party say that it's not even the IEC's job to implement Section 47(1)(e). They say this, and they do make a very good point. If it was the IEC's duty to implement Section 47(1)(e), the IEC would have raised the objection like the legislation allows them to do. Then, in addition to that, if the implementation of Section 47(1) not even just 47(1)(e) of the whole of Section 47(1) is the IEC's duty, then it should not even be waiting for the public to raise those particular objections. It should be doing the vetting process itself.
Right.
Because now what this also does is then it raises to question, out of the 15,000 candidates that across the various political parties and independent candidates, what confidence do we have that they qualify with Section 47? We have none, because IEC hasn't done that exercise, because the IEC is not of the belief that it's their job to do that vetting process. So that's a problem of the IEC doing that. I don't know if I'm making sense.
No, you are. And the more I think about it, as I was saying, it came out of my mouth, I realized and I heard it out loud. That's a gatekeeper of who the people want to stand for elections. And that's a dangerous slope, because what stops the IEC in whenever of saying, actually, we don't want any political parties, we don't think any of you stand, you now just have this one party that you can vote for.
Yes, and then it also makes the application of that arbitrary. It also makes the application of the section of the Constitution arbitrary and based off of who they know. So we know President Zuma went to prison because it was publicized, but we don't know if there's other candidates on that MK party list, on any other party's list that don't comply because it wasn't publicized.
What do you see coming out from the Constitutional Court in Nkululeko Tselane?
I see... Okay. I think if it goes to the Constitutional Court in the ordinary, I do think the Constitutional Court will rule, will try to fix the error in law that I've mentioned. The question first is that it's going to have to answer is the matter urgent? I think it's not. Then if it's not, then we'll get our answer after elections, which is fine. It's happened before. It's happened with the BLF party. The BLF party, an objection was raised to their participation in the 2019 elections, and we only got an outcome after the elections. So it's happened. It's not a new thing to get the outcome after elections. If it goes to the Concord, I do believe the Concord will rule that the former president cannot run.
Okay, I thought we had a voice note or two. We'll move on to that. Okay, the big question as well being asked is. He does stand. Zuma stands, and however it happens, he gets into Parliament. Parliament vote for him to be president. Can he be president of South Africa? If not, can he be KwaZulu-Natal Premier again?
He can. Look, I don't know. He's reached his term limit. I think that's another cause of legal debate as to whether he can be president again. I believe he can't. He's served his two terms. Then KZN Premier, I suppose he could. Unfortunately, off the top of my head, I don't know. I don't think he could because he's not on their provincial list. I think he's only on the national list.
Okay.
So he could go to Parliament, but I don't believe he could be elected as president again. That would need a constitutional amendment.
And then I love this question. The producer's given it to me. If he's just a member of Parliament, do all his presidential perks remain?
So that's the next interesting thing. So initially I was of the view no, but upon further reading, I think he will be able to maintain his presidential benefits if he doesn't take a salary. If I recall correctly, with former president Motlanthe, he did that and was able to retain his privileges ex post facto. So. That's going to be another legal question, and I think I was discussing with someone recently that the one thing that the former president has really done is really tested the boundaries of our law and really added to the jurisprudence.
I was going to say, as a journalist, I'm loving this because this is what we live for, these stories, these different angles, talking to lawyers and watching lawyers and judges sweat. It's so exciting to see. And I almost want to say, well done, Tim. Push the boundaries. See what happens.
That's what democracy is, because if our democracy breaks under pressure, then our democracy is not a strong democracy. Mm. All of these various processes test our institutions, test our law, test our courts. And it should be encouraged insofar as our systems withstand the pressure.
I think we got some callers. We got callers? Let's go. Can we go to Temba? Temba, you want to talk about in Klabecha, you want to talk about this. Temba, go ahead.
Yes, please. Thank you, Ashraf. Look, man.
It's John. Ashraf finished
John,
at six.
John.
No worries.
Look, the first thing first that we need to clear, IEC is well within its rights, as explained recently, that it's a party to this litigation. They are well within their right. But we are heading for a huge, huge disaster in the country. I am not sure if the Constitution is going to be able to stand this. Remember, one judge... When this matter was raised in the commission, as a commissioner, because she was sitting when President Zuma was being sentenced in the Constitutional Court, that judge recused herself. Now, if you're taking the matter to Constitutional Court, there are 11 judges in the Constitutional Court. I don't think it's a full complement. Who is going to sit for this matter?
Mm. Yeah,
does our Constitution allow the special appointment to deal with a specific matter? And who is to do that appointment?
Oh,
who is not?
See, that's what we're saying, Temba. This is really exciting times that we're living in. We've got to keep a close eye on all of this. Nkululeko, that's the point, right? We have to keep a close eye on the powers that be that are assigning judges, that are making sure the judges are legitimately able to sit in the cases, all those kind of things. This is our job to do.
Yes, this is democracy, and this is the importance of us all being active members of this democracy. We're not spectators to our futures.
Peter in Durban, hi.
Hi. I just have a few questions. I think it's terribly bad that Zuma may be allowed to be on the boxer's list. But a question that arises in my head, besides all this legitimacy, is in the first place, he was given a medical parole. How many years ago already? So he should be dead. And I remember that his advisor, a decade ago or so, was also given a medical parole because he's busy dying. And then 2 years later, he was playing golf.
Okay, so because he was given medical parole, I just want to confirm what you're saying, Peter. Because he was given medical parole, how can he still stand for parliament? Because he was given medical parole because he wasn't well, very unwell.
Terminally ill is the clause in the prison laws.
All right,
you've got to be terminally ill. Yeah.
Peter, thank you, Peter, in Durban.
Nkululeko.
No, I'm not familiar with the conditions around his parole, so I can't confidently comment on that.
All right, take a voice note.
Good evening. I don't agree with Nkululeko because the IEC weighed the objections and said, okay, it's correct that this candidate should not participate as a candidate in the elections. And thereafter, the MK party took IEC to the electoral court. It's not those who objected that were taken to electoral court, but it is the IEC which was taken there. So it has a right to say what we thought is correct, is correct.
Good afternoon, John. Listening to your discussion, it is relevant that it is urgent because of who the person is. It's not just one candidate. It's Jacob Zuma, who appeals everything, who used the Stalingrad form of defense for every single thing that doesn't go his own way. And now he is the Helen that someone is using the same type of defense and is appealing a decision that went his way. So you know what? What's good for the goose is good for the gander.
Nkululeko, let's wrap it up. What do you see happening here?
Good evening. I don't...
Well, we played that one. Go ahead, Nkululeko, finish it up.
Yes. I anticipate a very interesting constitutional court arguments coming from both sides. I don't believe it's urgent. I'm hoping the constitutional court will say it's not urgent because President Zuma former President Zuma isn't an independent candidate. He's running on a party list, and for all of those other reasons that I've mentioned, and that we can have this discussion after the elections. That way, the voters' choice can be given expression, and then we can probably deal with all of these legal problems in a lot more well considered and less temperamental environment.
Yeah, that's part of the problem, isn't it? When you bring up Jacob Zuma on a radio show, the tempers flare on from every side of a circle, not just left and right. It's from all over, and this is just adding fuel to that fire. And as you say, let's get rid of the fire and have a discussion afterwards.
Yes, exactly.
Nkululeko Tselane, thank you very much for joining us. Nkululeko is the legal director at the Institute of Election Management Services in Africa.